You're listening to the Home Base Podcast. This week, we are getting into round two of Mom Wars. This time, we discuss baby sign language, nutrition, cloth diapers, and a few others. Take a listen. Hey there, guys. Welcome to the Home Base Podcast. Hope you guys are having a fantastic week. Happy whatever day it is to you who are listening to this. But if you listen to it the day it comes out, because you're all subscribed, you get the notification saying, hey, there's a new episode, then happy Monday to you. If you're not subscribed, you need to head over to iTunes and subscribe. I keep telling you guys, I've got some really awesome, every episode is awesome, but I have some really exciting special guests that are coming up soon, and we're just trying to get some schedule things worked out, but they are coming, I swear. So you guys want to make sure you go over to iTunes and get subscribed. That way you do get the notification letting you know there's a new episode, because you don't want to miss an episode, because there's some amazing ones coming your way. So if you head over to iTunes, you can subscribe, and you can also, once you're subscribed, then you have access to all of our episodes through the feed, and you can also save episodes that you really like. Maybe you want to save them, re-listen to them later, share them with your friends, and then you can also go over and leave us some feedback so that I know how it's going. Alrighty, so go to iTunes, check us out, subscribe, share with everybody. Let everybody know that there's an awesome parenting podcast out there that they're missing and they need to be a part of. Right? Right. Alright, so we are here for Mom Wars Round 2 this week. And this will be the wrap-up of our Mom Wars segment. We had such great reception of last week's episode that I was like, we're definitely doing Mom Wars Round 2. If it ruffled too many feathers, I was probably just gonna nix it. But I was like, you know what? It went over really well, so we're gonna do Round 2, do a couple more little hot-button topics. Just the facts, no emotions, and then we're gonna wrap it up. So, yeah. So, this week, what's been going on this week for me? It's been pretty low-key here this week. We had a couple play dates and things going on, but other than that, pretty low-key. So, yeah, nothing overly exciting, I'm going to be honest. We finally got some rain here in Indiana. We've been needing a good downpour. It was starting to get pretty dry. The grass was already turning brown. I'm just not quite ready for that yet. I'm excited that the leaves are starting to fall, but I always hate it when the grass turns brown. I wish it would just stay green year-round, you know. Be nice. I know you people that are listening down south, you're like, ha ha, it does here. Ha 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 ha. Well, ha ha to you too. Alright, guys. We're going to take a quick break, get some fun jumping, jamming music, and let's kick off Mom Wars Round 2. Alright, are we ready for this? Let's get started. So, like I said, my goal here is to take some things that typically are hot button topics, and I just want to take them, neutralize them, just talk pros, cons, discard any myths that are out there for those people that just want the information and they don't want any of the emotion that goes along with it. So that's what we're going to achieve here today. And these topics aren't quite as hot and spicy as last week's topics. So if you missed last week's episode, make sure you go back and listen to it. Mom Wars. We hit on some really hot button things like crying it out, co-sleeping, breastfeeding, natural childbirth, stay-at-home mom versus working mom. Yeah, there's some hot ones in there. We got into red shirting as well, and yeah, there's a lot of good stuff. So make sure you go check it out. But today we're going to get it, kick it off here, and we're going to talk sign language. So to teach your baby sign language or not. So first, before we get into anything else, there is a myth out there. It's a little bit of a myth that sign language will delay your child from actually speaking. Now, this is not true at all, unless you are only signing to your child and you are not speaking to them as well. So obviously, if you're just signing, you know, what are some good, easy signs to start with? Let's just start with that premise there. A lot of parents, they teach their kids more, eat, please, thank you, mommy, daddy, diaper, all done, water. Once you get into the potty training, or some parents teach potty. I honestly am not sure why, because they should be talking by that point. But maybe just if they're still in a diaper and they're not speaking very well, they could let you know that they're dirty. So some easy signs like that. And if you are teaching these signs and you're not partnering it with the words and speaking to your kids, then yeah, you're going to delay their speech. But that's kind of like a duh, you know. So as long as you are teaching your kids the sign language and you are continuing to speak to them, you know, say the word with the sign and don't stop speaking to them at all, you know, don't break out and start talking to them just in sign, you know, you need to keep the words with it, tie those two things together, there's absolutely no research that shows that delays speech. So that is a big con for parents that typically they cling to that. They're like, oh, I don't want to teach my kids sign language. It's going to delay their speech. No, it's not. So we can just knock that out of the park right here. So once we knock that out, are there any cons left? The only con really with teaching your child sign language is you have to have everyone on board. It is hard for just one parent to do it themselves if the other parent isn't also signing. Or maybe you have a nanny, or your child goes to daycare. If you kind of have some inconsistencies there and only one of you is signing, it's not that your child can't pick it up, it's just going to be more difficult. It may take a little longer for it to manifest. So that would just be a little bit of a challenge there if you're going to make that decision. Maybe make sure that everyone is on board, or just be willing to give it a little bit more time. The pros to teaching sign language, an obvious one, they can communicate with you before they can actually speak, which is helpful on many levels. It also is a great way to teach manners, because you can implement them and get them learning please and thank you, more, all done. You know, you can get those manners started when they're really young, and then it's just natural for them to say thank you as they get into those terrible twos. It's already embedded in them. So it's a great way to get manners kicked off and on the right foot. And you get the communication started, which is really helpful. One of the signs I always loved that I would teach my kids when I was a teacher and I worked with younger ones is I would teach them help, which if you don't know the sign for help, you just hold your palm out and then you give a thumbs up with your other hand and you put it on top of your palm. You can look it up online. It's a real easy one. I've already started doing it with my son. Just because it's really great for them to learn to say, I need help. It's an awesome thing, and it makes you feel good when they ask for help, and you're teaching them that it's okay to ask for help. So that's a sign that I really encourage people to think about adding into their little regimen. And that's just one example of how being able to communicate with them is really helpful. Another one that's really helpful, and I haven't gotten to this one yet because we're just starting our little sign language ourselves, but I know a lot of parents like to teach whatever the sign is for hurt, if you're hurt or in pain, because then your child, if they're small and they're in pain and they can't tell you, you know, my arm hurts here or something, then they can at least point to it and then make the sign for hurt and communicate with you that way. Sign language is one of those things you're going to get out of it what you put into it. So if you make it a part of your every single day and you really start working on it, your kids are going to pick it up. But if it's one of those things you kind of slack off on it a little bit, then, you know, you might only get your kids to do a couple signs. And that's also the other thing. The people I have spoken to that have been the most successful with it, they say, I just sign every conversation, even if I'm not talking to my child, if I'm standing there talking to my spouse or signing anything that we're trying to teach our child, you just have to use it all the time and they'll pick it up. So it's just you just have to make that mental connection throughout the day. You need to knowingly try to remember that I need to do this and work it into your day today. So that is sign language. But don't forget, if you're going to do sign language, to keep talking. Next up on our list is we're going to talk about infant or toddler classes. So, the key one we're going to talk about is swim classes, but there's also different, music classes, there's mommy and me classes, and then as you get up older, then there's the sports. You can get into gymnastics, and you can get into, you know, soccer and football and basketball, blah, blah, blah. I'm focusing more on, like, the little infant classes, so not so much the sports stuff, because that is really, that is a whole other realm, and a lot of that is just what you can afford, what your schedule can allow, and there's just a myriad of things that play into the whole sports realm, so we're not even going to get into that. But I want to focus more on, like, infant classes. Should you be doing some kind of infant class with your kids? Is it a waste of money? What do we got? So, to break it down, pros and cons, it really depends on the class. As far as, like, the mommy and me classes, they're really pros there, obviously, are some great bonding time. But on the other side, you have to really ask yourself, could you get the equivalent of that bonding time maybe doing some kind of fun special craft or activity or outing to the park? Or, you know, you really got to ask yourself at that point, are you getting more out of the class than the child is? You know, what is your ultimate goal there? As far as, like, something like the swim class, those of you that regularly listen, you know, me and my son did a swim class. It was 8 weeks long. And if you have looked into these, they are kind of pricey. They can be expensive, but so con there is price. A lot of these infant classes, especially things like swimming, are expensive because they have, you know, they have liability and insurance and things that they have to pay for, especially with infants. That is way more expensive. So it can be expensive. But I will say, just from our personal experience in the swim class, it was really, really great because it really, he loves being in the water now. You guys should see him in the bathtub. It's crazy. He just has no fear. He will get on his stomach and head down in the water in the bathtub and be playing with things on the floor, and he'll bring it back up and, you know, sputter the water out and then go back down. Like, he just has no fear, and he's 9 months old. 9 months old, and he's getting in the water. And this was, we were one of the younger ones in the swim class. We had most of the others in there were around 15 to 18 months old. And they were all just jumping in the pool. I mean, just no fear. So it is really great. It gets your child over that fear of water. So if you really struggle with, like, bath time, or in the summer taking them to the pool this past summer, maybe you had some difficulties taking your baby to the pool. If you're really looking for a way to get over that fear and do it in a way that is really healthy and constructive, because these teachers, it seems like you're just playing a bunch of games, but they're really teaching your kids some great, important things. I know we did a lot of activities of, like, how to climb in and out of the pool safely, how to grab onto things and push off of walls, and you wouldn't think of it as you're like, oh, we're just, you know, we're pretending to be a rocket, we're pushing off the wall, but really we're learning, you know, space and boundaries and spatial awareness and how there's a wall here for safety and things that you don't really think about. So I really was impressed with the swim classes. I thought it was a great use of our money. If it's not in your budget, what is something you can do with the swim classes and with any class, honestly, that I've looked at? Most of them, you don't have to sign up for one big long phase. You can come in and just sit in on one class. It's normally under $10. It seems like, for a class, and you can go and sit in. And I know, like, our swim class, we just did the same thing each week. So if you sat in on one class, learned what they were doing, you could take those activities and then take your child to the pool and recreate that class, you know, and just practice those things there. So I really encourage people, go try out some different classes and find something that you really enjoy. And even if it doesn't work into your budget or into your routine, you can at least pick up some great activities you can do with your infants and then take it home and make it work for you. All right, this one is a tricky one. Screen time. We're talking television. We're talking phones. We're talking video games. Anything with a screen. Electronics. So it's pretty obvious that any kind of screen time isn't as stimulating as, you know, going outside and playing, or basically any form of playing. And especially when your kids are like under a year old, or even, you know, let's go up and say under 3 or under age 5, they're going to get more stimulation and brain growth from interacting with you building a block tower than watching something on TV. And that's just not my opinion. There's tons of science to back that up, and you guys can go read those boring articles if you don't believe me. They're out there. But here's the thing. I feel like not introducing electronics with your kids, there are studies that show that electronics are good, and this is the way that the future and the world is going. And so to completely not have that in your child's life would be putting them behind in almost like a subject in school, you know? If you're not introducing them to something, then they're going to be behind in it, and they are going to need to have those skills in life, because electronics are in our life whether we like them or not. So I don't think not having any kind of screen time is a good thing. And there's all sorts of science and studies to back me up on that. So what is a good balance you can find there between those? I really love, for those of you that do have satellite or cable or UVerse or AT, whatever provider you have, if you find in your channels Baby First TV, it's a channel specifically designed for your little infants, and it is really cool because they try to make every single program on there. For starters, most of the little programs are shorter than 5 minutes. So they're all very brief and very short, so it's not like your child is sitting there watching a half-hour cartoon. You can turn it on, watch 5 minutes, and then turn it off. So that's nice, but also what's really cool is they make all the shows interactive. And a lot of the shows, as you're watching, little things will pop up at the bottom of the screen and say, you know, point out different shapes in the background to your child, or see if you can list other things that start with this letter. There's like, I forget what the little show is called that's on there that comes on in the afternoons, and it's like a little get down on the floor and play with your child, and there's an instructor, and they get on there and talk about different activities you can do, and you do them with the instructor on the TV. And so it's very interactive, and I love that because I think that is where you're going to find your middle ground between no screen time and screen time. Don't just introduce your kids to it and then walk away and leave the room. Make that family time. I know most people, they're like, the whole pro of getting my kid on a screen is so that I can go do something. I get that. I do. Trust me. I totally understand it. There's those mornings my child wakes up at like 5 o'clock in the morning and I'm not awake and I plop him in his bouncer and then I turn on the TV and then I sit there on the couch and I try to wake up. I get it. I do. The only thing I could say to encourage you is if you spend that time when you're in front of a TV or playing on your iPad or on your phone or whatever gaming system you have, if you spend that time as a family around it, then when you turn it off, your kids, they will have gotten that one-on-one time and then they're going to go do something on their own. They're going to be more into playing in their room by themselves or, you know, playing with the Legos or the blocks, something, you know, they're going to go spend time by themselves. So you kind of got to ask yourself, I could sit here and watch this show and interact with my kid, or I could sit and build this Lego block tower for who knows how long. Yeah, it's a pick and choose. Your kids don't need you by their side all day. So just know that if you're sitting with them during your screen time, odds are you're not going to be sitting with them later. So don't think you can't interact with them during screen time because then you're not going to have any free time. That's not true. You will. So look for ways to interact with them. And also, when you're picking shows for your kids to watch, try to pick shows, obviously, that are educational, but pick shows and ask yourself when you're picking shows, what is this show's goal? What is their thing they're trying to achieve in this programming slot? So I feel like Sesame Street is a great example, and I'm going to bring them up later, and that's why I'm using them as an example now. Obviously, Sesame Street is educational. They try to find things. They have a letter and a number of the day, and they'll talk about opposites and weather. They have themes, you know, and they're trying to teach something. I can't really say I've ever seen Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles try to teach something. And I'm not saying your kids can't watch those shows. That's not what I'm saying. I'm just saying if you're wanting to get the most out of your screen time, then ask yourself, what is this show trying to accomplish? Are they trying to teach my child something, or are they just purely entertainment? Maybe if they're just purely entertainment, be sure to make that family time where you're sitting there and you're entertained together, because then at least you're getting that togetherness out of it. And later you guys can talk about the episode or the show or the movie that you watched, and you can talk about, what did you like about it? Did you like that outcome? Did you like how this, or would this have gone better this way? You know, you can find discussion points about it then. So if you can't spend every screen time moment with your kids, pick the ones where they're true indulgences. Make those the ones that you sit down with them and indulge together. All right. Catering to picky eaters. All right, I'm going to look at the clock now, and I'm going to try to not go on a tirade with this one. Nutrition is like my hot button. I'm so passionate about it when it comes to kids, and I sometimes can get carried away, so I'm just going to apologize now, and I'm going to try not to get carried away. But catering to picky eaters. So you were talking picky eaters in your household. We're talking kids that refuse to maybe eat something that's green, or, you know, I've known extreme cases that refused to eat anything unless it was like they had three foods and those were the three foods they would eat. I mean, there's all sorts of different levels of picky eaters. There are several studies that show that feeding into a picky eater, so giving them what they want, letting them get away with being picky, only escalates the problem. A lot of parents say, I don't want my kid to have bad associations around food. I don't want them to not eat, so I cater to what they want and don't feed them the things they don't want. And we all get that. Kids can be stubborn, and I have seen kids go on hunger strikes when their parents have refused to cater to their needs. It is a really, really tricky road to walk, and I think that's why I'm so passionate about it, because it is a serious struggle, and it affects families every single day. So this is something you definitely want to read about. Even if your kids aren't picky now, it can manifest at any time. And the sooner you are prepared for it, and the better prepared and equipped you are to deal with it, the better. Because you want to try to, as soon as the pickiness starts to manifest, you really want to try to not necessarily nip it in the butt, but redirect it is the best way to go. I know I'm not, see, I'm not starting this one like I am all the others. So pros and cons, let's step back, pros and cons to catering to your picky eaters. The pros are, for those that refuse to eat, you get them to eat. The cons would be that you're going to encourage this behavior. Okay, so if that wasn't clear, we just made it clear. So what can you do so that you're not encouraging the picky behavior, but your child is also getting the nutrition they need? I'm going to put a link in the show notes to some amazing curriculum. So I went to, when I was a teacher, and I was teaching preschool at the time, so 4 and 5 year olds, I went to a conference one spring break, and I came across this wonderful curriculum, and it's put out by Kids Health and a couple other places I'm trying to remember, but it is Sesame Street characters are all throughout this curriculum. Nemours and kidshealth.org is who puts this out. It is called Healthy Habits for Life, and it is a 100-page booklet, and it is all in a PDF file that you can download right on your computer. So anyone can get access to this, which is why I absolutely love it, but it is also extremely sound curriculum on teaching your kids healthy habits for life. So I'm going to put a link for it. Everybody needs to go and download this, save it to your computer, just browse it over. It's so great. There's wonderful songs you can sing, coloring pages, activities you can do, and then there's also the curriculum side of it that walks you through how to teach your kids about the food guide pyramid, about having a well-balanced plate, all the different food groups, and how to get them excited about being healthy. It's the best sound nutrition curriculum I have found in my years of teaching, and I love that it is an open resource to everyone. So a link for that is in the show notes. Make sure you guys go check that out, download it, save it, share it with your friends. And even share it with your, if you take your kids to daycare or your kindergartens, share it with those teachers, because nutrition curriculum is one of those things. It is very, very overlooked in schools. There are not a lot of nutrition programs in schools. It is heavily lacking, and a lot of them just don't have the resources, and they don't know where to find it. So go download this, email it to your kids' teachers. Everyone needs to read it. It's great. So what can you do for your picky eaters so that you're getting them to eat, but you're not feeding into it? One thing with picky eaters that you want to keep in mind, I did say it can manifest at any time. One of the reasons for that is if your child is doing really great eating at home, a lot of parents, they see this shift happen when kids go off to school, whether it's preschool, kindergarten, wherever they start. because they get to school and this whole social battle happens. Because your kid could be the greatest eater ever, and then they go to school and they make friends with this really picky eater. And before you know it, your kid doesn't want to eat broccoli either. And vice versa. All sorts of things happen. The picky eater realizes that, you know, cherries weren't as scary as they thought. And, you know, they kind of can rub off on each other. So keep that in mind. Try to get to the core of why your child is not a fan of that particular food. Most of the time, it is a fear. And those fears, they can just... they manifest for all sorts of different reasons. I had an aversion to green things as a child. I hated all green things. I would not eat avocado, no broccoli, no peas, no green beans, no lima beans. I mean, I didn't want anything green, nothing. I wouldn't even hear of it. No green candy, nothing. And there was absolutely no reason for it. I just had an aversion to green. I didn't like it. And... it just, that's how it was. But you don't want to feed into that fear, and you also don't want to do the extreme of causing, you don't want to use food as a punishment. Why not? I'm going to use myself as a great example. When I was a child, I had this aversion to green things, and I hated peas. My mother loved making creamed peas when I was younger. If you've never had creamed peas, they're these wonderful peas that are in a can with cream. And basically they look like boogers and snot all balled up in a can. Just not very appetizing, but everyone else in my family loved them but me. And one very unfortunate night, we had them for dinner, and my parents went out for a walk, and I sat at the table, and I was told I couldn't leave until I finished my peas. And since they were out of the house, I decided to just throw them away. So I threw them away and cleaned up, and when they came back, they asked me if I ate them, and I said yes. And later, when my mother looked in the trash can, she found them all wadded up in a napkin and then informed me that I was going to have peas for breakfast. She took an entire bowl of cream peas and placed them in front of me for breakfast and said I had 1 minute to eat them, or else she was getting more. So here I am, tears streaming down my face, shoveling in cream peas as fast as I can so I don't have to eat more. And needless to say, it didn't end very well, because when you're trying to eat something quickly that you don't like, it doesn't really go down. It just comes back up. So, but since then, I have one food that I absolutely cannot stand and just will not eat, and that is peas. I grew out of everything else. I love avocado. I'll tolerate green beans. I love broccoli. But peas, I've tried several times because I'm now an adult and I have the mindset that I want to love this. And I haven't found a way that I like it yet. So don't ever use food as a punishment, because you're just going to teach your kid that there is something to fear about that food. And you don't want to instill that. You don't want to teach them that their fears about that food are valid. So don't use that. Don't do that. Try to instead show them ways that you might like that food. So maybe your kid doesn't like creamed peas. Maybe they don't like peas cooked at all. Maybe they would prefer them in a salad. I love, I'm trying to think, what is the name of the cooking show on Bravo? Top Chef. Me and my husband love watching Top Chef. And there was one season, there was the, for those of you that are avid watchers, I won't go into who it is and all that because you guys don't care. But anyways, there was a chef on there, and I'll never forget, he said that he hated broccoli as a kid. And so his mission when he became a chef was to find a way to eat broccoli that he liked it. And so he cooked it all sorts of different ways and ended up finding out that he loved it roasted. So I really make it a game with your kids. Make it your mission. Help get them involved and say, you know what? I understand you don't like this way. Thank you for trying it. We're going to find a way that you like this and get them involved in the process. So don't just keep putting peas down in front of them in a different form and say, they're peas, because all your kid's going to say is, they're peas, I don't like this. So you need to get them involved in the cooking process. Say, okay, you didn't like steamed peas. How about we try baked peas, or how about we try, a glazed pea or a roasted pea or a cold pea in a salad, find a different way, but give it a different label. If you're constantly just labeling it as peas, your child's just going to go, I don't like peas. So give it a different label, find a different way to cook it that maybe they do like. And I have noticed a lot, if you just get kids in the kitchen and you get them involved in the cooking process, they want to try the end result because they made it. It's like this wonderful little secret. If they're involved in the process, they're going to want to try it, because then if they like it, they're going to be proud of their work. So there's all sorts of great, fabulous cookbooks and different things you can do with your kids in the kitchen. Just get on Pinterest and type kids in the kitchen, and you're going to get more than enough fabulous ideas. If you do follow me on Instagram, I did just post a great picture of a cookbook, I believe like 2 weeks ago. So go on, go to my page and look at my past photos, and you'll find it on there. And it's a really great one. And I'm trying to remember the author's name. I know she does another cookbook, and it's like multicultural cooking with kids or something. And she does different dishes from all over the globe, which is really cool. So if you have a kid that's really into geography, you could really get them involved in the kitchen cooking some different dishes, and that would be a really fun way. So don't give up. There's ways to get your kids interested in food, and that curriculum that I have the link to has a lot of really great ideas in there as well. And please feel free to reach out to me via Twitter. You can even send me an email, homebasepodcasts@gmail.com. You can reach out to me on the blog. If you have any questions or want some more suggestions, I would love to work with you guys. And with some great ideas, because like I said, this is one of my passions, and I hate seeing kids be afraid of food, because food is such a luxury and it's such a wonderful thing, and we just shouldn't take it for granted. So please reach out to me if you would love some further help. And if you guys all really love this topic, we could just do an entire episode on it. So that may be in the works once we get all these wonderful special guests done. All right, moving on to cloth diapers. See, I kept that to about 14 minutes. That's pretty good for me, because I could go on for hours. So 14 minutes, that was good. Cloth diapers. I was one of those parents when I was pregnant, and I heard people talk about cloth diapers. I would just immediately like curl up my nose. I'm like, ew, that's disgusting. I have since then looked into it, and I'm just going to go on the record and say we don't do cloth diapers. We do disposable. I have actually looked into cloth diapers recently, and it is not how they used to be. It is so much less gross now, and it's actually really cute. There's all sorts of really cute cloth diapers. And really, if you don't know anything about cloth diapers, the very common, there's a couple different ways you can cloth diaper, but the very common way is you get this waterproof, it basically looks like underwear, but it's a little thick and poofier, and they're shells, basically. A diaper shell is what they're called, and they're all sorts of fun, cute prints for those people that just love to let their kids crawl around in their diaper, which I do. So you get this shell, and then you have an insert that you put in there, and that's the cloth insert. And then once they, when you change them, you're basically just changing that insert and dumping it into a bag that, you know, holds in the odor and the smell and any liquids, and then you're just doing an entire load of dirty diapers. So it's way less gross, and it's actually really cute because the shells are really cute. So if you don't know anything about modern day cloth diapering, I suggest just giving it a look, even if you're not interested in it, just so you're educated of both sides. And that way, you're a little bit more open to it, because you never know, you may be on the receiving end of someone's kid and having to change their diaper, and they have a cloth diaper, and so being a little familiar about it might be good. So, pros and cons, the very obvious pro, it may be obvious to some. If you start looking into cloth diapering, you may assume that it's more expensive just because you're looking at the prices of some of these diaper shells and stuff, and you're going, holy cow. But you need to step back and realize it's an investment. You're not rebuying this stuff constantly, and in cloth diapering is actually much, much cheaper. One also really nice thing about cloth diapering is if you do go the route where you're using the waterproof shell and you're just changing the cloth inserts, those shells you can reuse for multiple children. They hold up really, really well. So once you have one child through diapers, you can, you know, just hang on to those shells, buy new cloth inserts, and here you go. You're all ready for your next child. And the cloth inserts are pretty inexpensive. So it's kind of a one-time investment thing, whereas if you do the disposables, you know, you are just putting money into it and you're never seeing any of it back. And oddly enough, this sounds really weird to say, cloth diapers hold their value really well. I've seen a lot of people sell used shells and still get a decent amount of money out of them. So if you are one of those people that likes to put money into stuff and get some money back out at the end, this may be the route for you. Some of you may have just heard that people are buying used shells and you're freaking out. Please remember, it is a waterproof fabric. Everything is just, you know, rinsing right off of this. Nothing is being absorbed into the material, so it is sanitary. May not be your sanitary standards, and if that's how you feel, then cloth diapering's just probably not for you. So those are the couple really big pros. It is a lot cheaper, one-time investment. The big con for cloth diapering is it is a lot to ask of people who maybe, you know, you have a sitter, someone comes and watches your kid one night and they've never even seen a cloth diaper. That could be a lot. It could be a lot for your grandparents, you know, other people that are going to be around your kid and maybe change their diaper. They may not quite be used to this new cloth diapering technique. And so it may just be a lot, you know. I feel like it is one of those decisions you really have to make sure everyone in the household is on board, because it is a commitment. It is very much a commitment, and I feel like everybody has to be kind of trained in how to change the diaper. So if you do have some kids that are maybe older than your, you know, if you have like a 7-year-old in your household and you have a newborn and the 7-year-old's going to help out, you got to make sure everybody's on the same page and knows what they're doing. Because, you know, poop is still poop, and you don't, you know, tons of things can be passed through fecal matter, and so you want to make sure that you are handling it properly. So it is a lot to take on, and you do want to make sure that you're doing that correctly. So that's kind of the big con there. There's really no middle ground. It either is something that you feel comfortable with or it isn't. But it is one of those things. I really would encourage everybody to just research up on it, because like I said, you never know when you're, because it is becoming very common. And so you never know when you're going to have that kid that you babysit and the parent is like, oh, by the way, we cloth diaper. And you're going to kind of want to know what you have to deal with. And it is good to just kind of educate yourself on both sides, because you might get into reading it and go, oh, this isn't that big of a deal. I honestly think if I did my research before we had my son, when I was still pregnant, I think we may have gone the cloth diapering route just because it is so much cheaper over the long run. But now we're at that point where we're like, you know, we're 9 months into this. In a year, we're going to start potty training. So it's like, is it really worth it at this point in time? I'm going to go with no. If you're someone who's cloth diapering, you may be shouting over there going, yes, yes, it is. But, you know, I think it's just one of those things. It's a personal choice, and you got to figure out what floats your boat and what floats in your household. So our last topic tonight that we're going to cover is Pinterest. And I almost didn't put it on here because I really feel like there's really not that much to say. But when I saw this as a topic, and I've seen it a few times online, and I didn't think it was that big of a deal. And then when I was kind of like researching Pinterest mom wars, it just exploded. And I was shocked. I mean, there's like articles out there that are even titled Pinterest Moms, Please Stop. And I just was so shocked that this is such a big hot button mom war topic. And so I apologize to those of you that each week you listen to me and you're like, oh my gosh, again, her and Pinterest. Like, come on, lady. Like, just, God, get over it. Here's what I want to say about this. Pinterest pros and cons. Pros to Pinterest. There's a lot of information on there. There is a lot of DIY information on there. If you are looking to do something, chances are you can find a tutorial on Pinterest. So it's a really great resource for that. Cons. I'm trying really hard here to find a con because I personally don't really think there are any. But I'm not going to be judgmental and I'm going to find one. I could say that a con for Pinterest is if you are one of those people that you have great ambitions but you're just not good with follow through, then Pinterest may be a tad depressing for you. Or maybe you just don't have the schedule to be doing all these DIY things. Maybe Pinterest isn't quite the place for you. I do want to say though, there is everything on Pinterest. So what? You may not be the Miss Crafty Mom, or you may not be the Mr. Home Improvement Dad. There is so much cool traveling stuff on there, organizational things, organizing for your workplace. I'm like at a loss right now. I'm freezing up. There's all sorts of great, if you're into cooking or food, there's all sorts of great food things on there. Reviews for restaurants, articles on parenting. It isn't just a place for you to find the craft of the day or fun activity. I get on Pinterest a lot just for parenting questions, because here's my thing. I can go and Google sleep training and I'm going to get a lot of stuff. I'm going to be getting this study and this study and this research and this research and this book recommendation, and then I'm going to get a couple blog posts. And if I go onto Pinterest, I'm going to get pretty much mainly blog posts on Pinterest. And what do I love about sleep training blog posts? They are someone's personal experience. So I can read what someone wrote worked for them. So it's worked for someone, you know, and I find that incredibly comforting versus reading some study where they surveyed a bunch of people and blah, 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 and they found that this answer did this, and you may be more of a study person. I really like doing blog posts because I feel like it's a personal touch. You can reach out to all of those people. You can go right to their blog and leave a comment or send them an email and say, hey, I'm really struggling with this. Did you have this problem arise? You know, it's a really personal touch. And as parents, we've got to realize absolutely no one is an expert at being a parent. And so it is absolutely okay to ask for help. And it is okay to ask for help from any other Joe Blow parent. You know, you don't need to go find someone with their PhD in early childhood development. They could have that PhD and have no kids and have no hands-on experience, you know. So keep that in mind and realize that there is that side of it too. One thing I am going to say, and this is my whole reason behind why I do the podcast, is my hope is that it is helping someone out there. You know, I only share with you guys things that I have found that work for me or that I have thoroughly researched, or I try to only share things that I can put my name and label and stand behind it and say, this has worked for me. And if that helps someone else out there, then that's great. And that is my entire goal. And I feel like that is people's goals on Pinterest. They post this stuff not to rub it in people's face of, hey, look how great my kid's birthday was. Hey, look how great this rainy day activity I did with my kids turned out. Hey, look at my awesome chicken parmesan. Isn't this super, you know? That's not people's goals. People get excited because, hey, look at this awesome thing we did. I want to share it with you so you guys can have this awesome experience with your kids too. I want to share this great chicken parmesan recipe with you because it was so delicious, and I want other people to eat this because it was so delicious, and I want you all to have this delicious experience. Try to not get such a negative outlook. I really don't think that there are people out there that are just trying to say, I'm better than you, la-di-da, look at my perfect life. We all have crap that is going on that nobody sees, so don't take it personal. Take it as people are just trying to share what worked for them with you. All right, guys, we are going to take a break, and we're going to come back with our mommy mantra and our parenting hack of the week. So stay tuned. And we're back. All right, so before we dive into our last two things here, I just want to remind everyone to go to iTunes and subscribe, because we have awesome, awesome, awesome guests coming on very soon. It's super exciting. I can't even tell you guys how exciting it is. I have been just super excited about where the podcast is going and that it's going places I never even thought it would go. So it's super exciting. It's an exciting time, and it's super encouraging, and the holidays are coming, so I just kind of get this feeling that a lot of awesomeness is coming on the show soon, so make sure you guys go and subscribe so you don't miss out on any of it. Also, you can find all of our episodes and all of our awesome posts and all of the awesomeness at the blog, which is homebasepodcast.com. You can follow on Instagram or Twitter at homebasepodcast. And you can also send a direct email, homebasepodcast@gmail.com. You can go also subscribe on Periscope, Homebase Podcast, and you can watch me do some silly DIY tutorials on Periscope. I was doing really good and doing like one every single day, and then it just got to where I was spending too much time on my phone and doing other things and not enough time with my kids. So I've actually cut back on the Periscope videos, but I do try to do a couple a week, so you can go check those out. So, our parenting hack this week, is this wonderful, wonderful, wonderful toy that I found. So, there was a consignment sale out here in lovely Indiana a few days ago, and I'm all about hitting up consignment sales because I can find some nice, inexpensive gently used clothes for my child because he is just growing so rapidly. He just turned 9 months old last week, which is just crazy to even think about that he's now been on this earth as long as he was in my stomach, which is just insane. So I went and found him some nice used clothes because he's just growing so quickly. He's already growing out of 12-month things and is in like 18 months, and I can't even handle it. But while we were at this consignment sale, I found the cutest, awesomest toy ever, and I'm going to put a link and a picture up in the show notes, and it'll be on Twitter and Instagram. You guys can see it. It's awesome. It's from the company Lamaz, which they make all sorts of really great toys if you haven't noticed. They're awesome. But it's this wonderful octopus. And each one of his 8 legs has a horn inside it, and when you squeeze the leg, it makes a little honk sound. And each leg is a different pitch. And so it's super fun, all the different, you can play a song on this octopus, and my son loves it. It's yellow, and it's bright, it's got bright colors, each leg is a different color, and it's really fun. He fell in love with it instantly, and I just really recommend it. And what's really funny about it is back when I was teaching preschool, and we had show and tell, like 3 years ago, one of my students, he brought in this octopus and was showing it to everyone. And I always said, I'm like, if I ever have a kid, I'm getting this toy because it is so cool. And I haven't been able to find one outside of buying it online, which I just haven't broken down and done. And I was so thrilled to find it at the consignment sale because it looks like it's brand new and it's never even been played with. And it was super cheap. So score there. You guys will see a picture of my score, so go check it out. Lamaz, great brand, great stuff, and it's, I'll get a link up. I'm sure it's called something like octopus horns, horny octopus, something like that. Oh my goodness. Real quickly before I get to our mommy mantra, I did want to read to you guys. I read a really interesting article, and I put it on Twitter, and I will put a link to it also in the show notes so you guys can go read it, because it was a really interesting read. It was 4 reasons the mommy wars are good for parenting in America. And I thought, okay, what? This is completely goes against everything I just did these 2 episodes on, and I was like, I gotta read this. But I really think there's some really cool stuff here, so I wanted to read a little bit of it to you, and then you guys can read the full shebang if you want. So up here it says, perhaps there are right answers to these questions about whether to breastfeed, use Pinterest, or stay at home. Or at the very least, maybe there's a better way to think about them or handle the accompanying decisions, both for the benefit of individual mothers and for society as a whole. But that way will only emerge if we keep debating, if we keep talking, differing, and sharing our views. Of course, the language of war is overblown. It, too, is a reflection of America's larger culture wars. The terms of our discourse about motherhood, as in all things, should aim to be more civilized, less angry, more constructive, and cooperative. But that doesn't mean the discourse, the disagreement, should stop. Mothers should not be afraid to dig into the trenches, fire the first shot, and fight on. In other words, inform yourself, take a position, and defend it. But do it kindly and constructively, like a good mom. I thought this was really interesting because I do think it is very true that the only way we find solutions to things is by continuing to discuss them and debate them. And I love the use of the word debate versus argue. and I love the word discuss. We need to discuss and debate these things and do it constructively. And I love how she closes with, like, a good mom, because really we need to be conducting ourselves in these discussions and debates in a way that we want our children to act, we need to reflect how we want them to handle situations like this as adults. So we need to make sure that we are also acting like adults and doing it in a cooperative and respectful way. But I mean, just a great example, I think, is I look how much breastfeeding has just exploded and just, you know, the past 10 years, and how so much keeps changing, and just how people are fighting for breastfeeding rights, and it is an amazing, wonderful movement. And that wouldn't have happened if people had kept their mouths shut about the issues. So don't be afraid to spark some of these mom wars. Just make sure you are doing it with a great mental image in your head of a good goal that you're trying to accomplish. Don't do it purely out of hate and despite, and make sure you educate yourself on both sides and just do it in a respectful and cooperative way. So I want to close with our mommy mantra this week, which comes to us from Rajneesh, which is an Indian guru. Unfortunately, he has passed away. But he has this wonderful quote that goes, "The moment a child is born, the mother is also born. She never existed before. The woman existed. But the mother, never. A mother is something absolutely new." And you can completely sub out mother for father because they both never existed before. I think we need to not lose sight of that, because in the end, we all are just trying to get to know this part of us that is new. You know, I'm 26 years old. I was 25 when technically when I had my son. So for 25 years, I was this person. And now there is this completely new part of me, and a very, very big part of me, and I don't even know who this person part of me is. And we all are just on this path of trying to figure out who and how to be and maneuver this big part of us and how to really just embody it. And we need to keep that in mind, because that is all of our mission, and we're not all going to be perfect. We're not all going to be great at it. In fact, there is no such thing as a perfect parent, and we're all just doing the best we can. So keep that in our minds and our hearts when we have these lively discussions and debates. All right, guys, you guys have a wonderful week, and I will see you next week for another great episode of Home Base Podcast. Take care.